Ross has all the spring deals you want, so you can say yes to more looks for you and your budget. Tube tops for less? Yes. Dad shorts for the weekend? Yes. Mini skirts for less than online? That's a yes for you and your bank account. Find your certified yes for me moment and save 20 to 60% off department store prices every day at Ross. Hurry in for spring deals today. Items and styles vary by store.
At Delta, we know Mike in 8C prefers reality TV to reality. So we provide more than 1,000 hours of in-flight entertainment. On the next flight, 8C is Mandy, a foodie. So we offer all types of food options. Because at Delta, everyone flies their own way. Delta, keep climbing.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Plus, auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Quote now at progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance and Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
The year is 2024, and your nominees for the hottest unspooled takes are Napoleon should have just been a screensaver. Amy Nicholson. Miyazaki is overrated. Paul Scheer. Maestro is bloated and empty. Amy Nicholson. And finally, Scott Adkins, the big guy from John Wick 4, should have been nominated for Best Supporting Actor. All this and more on today's Unspooled Oscar Edition.
Everybody, and welcome to
Unspooled.
We are in studio face to face. Amy, I think we've only done this like a handful of times since the pandemic, right?
I miss your face.
I know. This is kind of crazy seeing everybody in real life. And we have a big episode, the Oscar episode. I love doing this episode with you. We already talked about some of the best films of the year. Now we're getting into what has been deemed the best films, the award worthy films. And it wouldn't be the Oscars without a bet. Last year, we had a bet. Whoever got the most wrong would have to wear the other person's favorite NBA jersey. You're a Laker fan. I'm a Clipper fan. You were forced to wear
a Clippers jersey to a Clippers-Lakers game. It was absolutely brutal. I was absolutely horrified. I was so sad. And you know what? I knew that I walked into it. The whole time, my boyfriend was embarrassed to be with me. And he said, why can't you just vote your ballots better? Why do you always vote your ballot with your heart? Because that's where I go wrong.
Yes.
I vote with my heart every single year on the Oscars. And it means I always lose. So this year, we're going to do something a little different. We're just going to try to lose as many as possible. So
yes,
that way I can vote from my heart when I think my heart is actually going to be betrayed. And so whoever gets the most wrong,
yes,
is now the champion.
I love it. And I've already been overthinking my wrong choices. I cannot wait. But let's get into it because we have a big show here. Let's go to the Oscars via the Best Picture. ...2024 Oscars. Amy, let's talk about the Best Picture nominees. Everything flows through Best Picture. Let's go over them right now. American Fiction, Anatomy of a Fall, Barbie, The Holdovers, Killers of the Flower Moon,
Maestro, Oppenheimer, Past Lives, Poor Things, The Zone of Interest. And you're right, this is exactly where we should start. If the movie culture of the year is a flowing river, this is the opening waterfall through,
yes,
which this conversation,
this is where it goes,
shall flow. I'm doing Tai Chi hands.
I like it. I'm thinking of myself sitting in a waterfall full of amazing movies. I will say that this year, these movies that we just talked about are all pretty great and really diverse. And I think that sometimes in our conversations, we'll see like, oh, well, there's one popular choice. There's a bunch of films that people haven't seen. And, you know, in our conversations too, there are movies that didn't really push the envelope, but they feel like they pushed the envelope, like Oscar bait movies. And I actually feel like these movies are really, really good. They pushed the envelope the right way. They're done by really interesting people. There's not much Oscar bait on here.
No, there's nothing that seems so basic. Like, here I am in the past hammering my fist and this is about social injustice. And when there is a film that at least touches on those ideas, like Killers of the Flower Moon, it's interesting. It's genre. It's dark. It's thriller. You know, Napoleon didn't get nominated for a reason. This is a Napoleon-free best picture list.
Napoleon, I think, got a little bit of a bad rap this year. I think it's a comedy, and I think people wanted it not to be a comedy.
I think if you made a screensaver that was just of the image of being below the ice and all the horses and soldiers are falling into it and drowning and dying, that would be amazing. Is that too morbid for a screensaver?
Wait, that's the only contribution that Napoleon has to cinema, is that it could be a screensaver.
It would be the kind of screensaver on the TV that my boyfriend's cat would just touch all the time, trying to kill the soldiers twice. I'm serious. I will say a good thing about Napoleon. Okay. That was mean. I love Vanessa Kirby. I think she's great in that movie. I would put Vanessa Kirby in pretty much every movie.
Would you make her a screensaver, though?
Yes. Okay. Vanessa Kirby staring at me, maybe in her Mission Impossible outfits, making me feel really unnerved.
Well, you brought it up that Killers of the Flower Moon is kind of like the most traditional film. I would argue that Maestro is, to me, the Oscar bait movie on this list. If I had to pick one, it's that. Oppenheimer.
You can see it, like, in the sweat, right? In Bradley Cooper's face. He's just like, you have to nominate me for this. Look at all of the work I'm doing.
And that's where I might argue that I feel like Maestro is a great performance and an okay movie. I like the movie. It's good. People are good in it.
I think Maestro could have been crazier and I would have loved that. Like, I heard the original script of Maestro was closer to something like all that jazz. Leonard Bernstein at the end of his life looking back at all of the heartbreak he hath wrought.
Yeah.
And that would have been fun. And I feel like you see one trace of it when he, you know, is romancing his wife and it momentarily becomes, I think it's On the Town, a musical. They do dance number.
Yes,
and you're like,
yes.
Oh, the movie got like expressionistic for a second and fun and florid. And then it's like back to sad.
I talked about this last year with you. It's hard for me to separate the performance from the film because I really enjoyed watching Bradley Cooper in this. Like, he just transforms and it's exciting and it just feels like you're in this whole different rhythm with him. And I don't know if I would have liked the movie without his performance. So that's really where I come down harder on this movie. But
I think you just gave it the compliment Bradley Cooper wants. I think if you come out of that movie saying, it is Bradley Cooper's performance, he'd be like, thank you. Thank you. That's all I was going for. Yeah.
I mean, and looking at this list, I think as far as the actor role, like, he pretty much, in my mind, kind of has it. I mean, I think when I look at that list of best actors, it's Bradley Cooper, it's Colman Domingo, Paul Giamatti, Cillian Murphy, and Jeffrey Wright. And I'm sure I said Cillian Murphy wrong, but be that as it may, love Jeffrey Wright. Great performance.
Great performance.
Yeah.
I regret to say, Jeffrey Wright, you are the selection I picked for. You will lose this Oscar because that is our ballot.
Yes.
This year.
Right.
Who will lose every category. I think he will lose, but I think his performance is what holds that movie together, because American Fiction, really solid, very interesting, kind of two movies fused together, right?
Yeah.
One is a satire. One is a naturalistic problem drama about a man and all the problems he's having with his family. And it's only because I think Jeffrey Wright keeps the same stone face throughout the whole movie that you believe that it's one script.
Well, Jeffrey Wright has that thing where he can play comedy and drama so adeptly and it doesn't really change his performance. Like, I love Jeffrey Wright and I was looking forward to this movie since I heard about it. I don't know where it premiered, but I remember reading about it. I was like, oh, this sounds really, really fun. But again, I think that, you know, actor in a leading role goes to a showy performance.
It does. And Jeffrey Wright has closer to what this is a compliment. I want to announce really, really clearly this is a compliment. But he has what I think of as actor cat face. You know when, like, there's a cat meme and cat's not doing anything visible?
Yeah.
Where the cat doesn't look like it's putting on a performance.
Sure.
But the cat is so watchable and you're, like, ascribing all these emotions to it and you're really invested in what is going on in that cat's head. Some actors can do cat face. I don't know a better way of describing it.
So are you saying that, like, Jeffrey Wright is our grumpy cat?
I'm saying there's, like, he puts on this blankness that is, I think, kind of hard for a human being to do.
Right.
He doesn't make you like him. You want to like him. That's cat face.
I'll tell you, I did a Paley Center thing for Westworld, and I was looking for his validation the entire time. It was a very, you want to connect with him. He does. You're right. Like, you don't know if he's mad at you or he likes you. Like, there is this.
Yeah. To be blank, but riveting. Very, very, very hard.
And I also think Paul Giamatti kind of falls in this category too, right? Like, he gives a performance that I think is so good in Holdovers, like really, really solid. But I think that he like lives in the margins. Like, you may not go, well, what's the difference between that and Sideways? And it's subtle, it's small, but it's really, really good. Like, I think that, you know, talking about the Oscars so much and looking at these best pictures, these are the performances that will be remembered for a long time, but they're not the ones that I think people are racing to check. Like, I think we automatically are like, Bradley Cooper, oh, that prosthetic, he did the whole thing. He's in there. He's in different costumes, different times, everything. We're going to go forward on him. I mean, even Cillian Murphy. Like,
oh, Cillian, you're trying it both ways.
I know.
Make sure you get it right once.
I'm going to get it right one of the times, and I'll mess it up again too. Cillian Murphy gives a fantastic performance that isn't, I don't know. It's not to me like something that I would race to check a box off. But I think that the Oscars likes, give me a prosthetic, give me a wig. It's like there used to be this thing when at UCB or Second City, I think, came up with this. Like, when they would make fun of the Groundlings, they'd like that. All they do is like a limp and an accent. And I do think that, look, you look at the Groundlings, they're very successful. And I do think that that happens here in the Oscars.
I mean, I will say that in other people's hands, Emma Stone in Poor Things, that role could have just been a limp and an accent.
Right.
But I love that performance so much. She brings so much more to it. She elevates beyond what people might think that role is. You know, I
yes.
heard people refer to her role in Poor Things. My friend Katie Walsh said this. She's a great critic. She called it horny Barbie.
Oh, 100%. I mean, Barbie and Poor Things share so much DNA.
I am a woman who has been manufactured for other people going out into the world, and what do I want on my own terms?
I think that Barbie does it better, but I love Poor Things, and I think maybe I would love Poor Things more if it was like a half an hour shorter. I felt like they kept on saying the same thing. Like, the story didn't go forward. I was in love with the way it looked. I love this director. I'm blown away that Poor Things has made it to the best picture. I'm also blown away that it made like $100 million.
I love that for Poor Things. I'm so happy for Poor Things. I agree with you. I mean, I thought we spent a little bit too long in the brothel.
Yes, that section really gets a little bit drawn out. I feel like I don't know what the film is saying at that point. I feel like it kind of runs out of a little bit of a narrative steam at that point.
Yeah, I agree. And I've heard people take it to task in terms of like an adapted screenplay, which it's up for, because the book makes a clear arc that when she goes out into the world and she comes back, you know, that little detour where she discovers poverty for the first time while she's on the cruise ship, that when she comes back in the book's arc is so much about also renouncing wealth. And in the movie's arc, she just comes back and she's a really, really rich doctor.
Oh, interesting.
Right?
Yeah.
People who've read the book are like upset. I guess this is why maybe sometimes I shouldn't read the book. I didn't read the book. I didn't know. I thought it was fine.
Well, you shouldn't read the book because the movie should stand on their own two feet. And by the way, I just want to go back and make sure I say, like, you know, the accent and the limp, I'm not saying that that's a bad thing. I'm just saying that it
you
is more.
You love accents and
limps. Look, I made my career in sketch. I made my career in sketch comedy. I got an accent and a limp. I'm just saying that, like, I think that more nuanced performances fall by the wayside. It's also because we see so much stuff. And when you say, and you look at this list of people across the board and leading and supporting roles, the ones that are bigger just stick in your head. I remember.
I think Oscars is always bigger, right?
Right.
In all the categories, bigger costumes, bigger editing.
And when you look at the other performances in the leading actress category, it falls into the same issue that it does for actor in a leading role, which is the rest are really nuanced, understated performances across the board. And I love Sandra Hüller in Anatomy of a Fall. I thought that she is, I love that. I loved it.
Yeah, she's so good at playing unsympathetic people. But yeah, Lily Gladstone, that is the ultimate subtle performance.
Yeah.
You know, where she's sort of going through this movie in the way she carries herself, the way she holds herself, the way she reacts to things. She kind of underscores that, you know, she and Leonardo DiCaprio are from like just two different ways of approaching life, two different cultures.
Right.
And to me, I've really admired that. But then my one weird tiny quibble, which I just have to say, is that her sisters act a lot more like Leonardo DiCaprio than they do like her.
Right.
So I was like, well, what's that about though? Like, is her family, you know, coming from a real type of stoicism, or is she just the weirdo? Is she the family weirdo? Because I thought it was interesting when I thought it was going into like exploring cultural differences.
Right.
But then I think, oh, it's just I guess it's just her. I mean, the other really big performance, though, here in actress for a leading role that I have to talk about.
Yeah.
And I have to talk about it just because I feel like I'm the only person who saw this movie is Annette Bening in Naiad.
I knew you were going to say it, and I saw it.
You saw it?
I saw it.
I thought I was the only person on earth who saw Naiad besides my aunt,
who is a swimmer. No, it's on Netflix. We watched it. We watched it with our kids because we thought it was like such a triumphant kind of interesting story.
Are they ever going to go in the ocean again after that?
Yeah, they probably will. I mean, they don't care.
But the jellyfish.
You know, they're fine. They're fine with it. That's a great performance. I think that that's a movie that actually benefits from being on Netflix. You said no one saw it. I agree that I don't think it's part of like the cultural conversation, but I think a lot more people saw it than you think because it just feels like, oh, we'll watch this. I don't think it even feels like an Academy Award film. It just kind of feels like, oh, how did I miss this? Oh, yeah, great.
Yeah, she's amazing in it, isn't she? I mean, that is just a portrait of a woman who is a complete monomaniac about accomplishing something. A woman who is more driven than I will ever understand in my life.
I love it.
Like, every time I'm just going to be lazing around in my sweatpants eating oatmeal, I'll be thinking of Diana Naiad just judging me mercilessly. And I think Annette Bening just goes for broke in that. You know, I have her as my pick for who will lose this category.
Okay.
But I want to just shout her out and say, the way that she mimics swimming in the ocean, the way you can tell she actually trained to learn how to swim, like a real swimmer, the way she is just like, what is vanity? I have no vanity anymore. Here am I with my lips swollen 9 times their size and my eyes are welded shut. And then to put that in a movie that I think is so much about female friendship with her and Jodie Foster, I love that little pairing of them, the two of them running around this movie.
What you're describing is Rocky. That's what you're describing. He gets beat up. His friendship, his relationships, one person against this giant. I mean, it's all right there. Just a ripoff of Rocky.
Well, I put them down to lose together.
I just want to go back to Maestro for a second because 7 nominations with Maestro. Actor, actress, cinematography, makeup, and best picture and sound. Is it bloated? Because this is the only issue I have with these movies. I enjoyed them all, but if I looked at this list, I think I can count 4 films that feel bloated to me, that feel like it could have been a half an hour shorter. I know I already said it. I will. I mean, Killers of the Flower Moon, like, yeah, we could have lost some time. Poor Things could have lost some time. I really liked Oppenheimer, and
I was hoping you were going to say that.
Yeah. That I wanted it to lose some time.
Yeah.
I really liked Oppenheimer. I don't think if you lost a half an hour from it, it was going to make that much of a difference. As a matter of fact, I was enjoying Oppenheimer so much that I turned to my wife and I was like, wait a second. They haven't even done the bomb part yet. Like, and we'd already been there for 2.5 hours. So I was like, it felt like, got it. I like that performance. And then I guess, you know, and then this is where I would put Maestro on the fence. I actually think Maestro walks right up to the bloat, right? But doesn't go over it.
Well, my impatience with Maestro was really just that it feels bloated, but also empty in certain parts where I wanted more.
Right.
Specifically to me, it felt empty in the idea of this is a guy who created some of the greatest music of the 20th century. Where is it? I don't understand anything about his artistic process. I don't know who he was as an artist. I don't know how he came up with his ideas.
Right.
I don't know how he brainstormed things. And they almost make a joke of how they don't care about his music in it. They're like, oh yeah, I'm writing this Romeo and Juliet thing. And then they move on.
Yeah.
I didn't get any insight into him. And maybe to Maestro's detriment, I watched it the same weekend that I watched another Oscar nominee up here, American Symphony.
Okay.
And, you know, that was also on Netflix. And it's very much about, it's a documentary about a composer and how he works and how his brain works and why he puts things together and why he does what he does. And if any of that had been a Maestro, I would have liked it 9 times better.
I wonder if that's hard to show in a narrative film.
It'd be like musical notes swirling around your
head. Like, I remember there was one reporter who wanted to do a feature on me for a magazine when I was doing Best Week Ever back in when I first started my career. It was for Entertainment Weekly. And he's like, I want to just see your process. And I was like, my process is I sit with a piece of paper and I just write a bunch of jokes, you know, and it's like, I don't talk them out, you know, not that I am doing anything on the level of Leonard Bernstein, but it's like it's a very internal process, right? You know, oh, I'm changing this. But also I was listening to Barbara Streisand's Book on Tape, which is great. I'll be saying that for the next year because it's 48 hours long. But she was talking about The Way We Were and about creating a song and how it seemed like over months they're working on that song that I think most people know as Memories, but it really is The Way We Were. And just like moving around words and picking up the tempo. And it's great to hear as an anecdote. I don't think it would be fun to watch. So I understand why maybe he couldn't go there, but I also feel that like I wanted more. I wanted more than just the relationships. Because it does feel like the movie is defined by these relationships.
Yeah, and I felt like to me, even those get a little skimmed over. Yeah. Like his boyfriend looks sad and then his boyfriend is not in the movie anymore.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, now, what would you think if Spielberg directed it like intended? Because this was supposed to be Spielberg's movie. And apparently Bradley Cooper wanted to play him, invited him to go see Star is Born. And Spielberg's like, you know what? You direct this. You go make this movie instead. I did read that Cooper took 6 years to learn how to conduct. Was it worth it?
Oh, now I'm going to sound so ignorant, but it's fine. You wave your arms around. I've never understood what a conductor does in the first place. Well, and I would have liked to walk out of Maestro understanding what a conductor does.
Well, here's what I will say. And maybe this is where I'm like, people will be yelling at me. I'm sure they will be. But who cares if you are conducting appropriately in a scene like that? Because how many people will know that it's right or wrong?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like If Nintendo had invented a game where you had a joystick and you waved it around like you were a conductor, I feel like I could
like
do a pretty
good job. Like the wizard, the glove, power glove?
Like the power glove of conducting. I feel like, what do? You look at who's about to play and you wave your hands at them. You wiggle if you want them to go louder.
I just don't know if
I don't get it.
Maybe.
I mean, I was in band in middle school. I'm an expert. I played violin for 4 years. I'm an expert. I never understood what our conductor did. I was looking at my sheet music.
Well, we just talked about this with Amadeus just a little while ago. You know, there's a bunch of scenes in there where people are conducting. Did they spend 6 years? Was that appropriate? Was it right? I didn't clock it. I don't think anyone did. It's like one of those things. That's like the little thing that like gets touted around. Like, oh, you see, you got to give him the Academy Award because he did 6 years.
And I mean, I will say justice for Cooper in that I still...
Justice for Cooper.
Justice for Cooper, not for this movie, but justice for Cooper as a person who still, you know, deeply loves A Star is Born and felt like that movie got a little robbed.
Yeah.
But this is not the film. This is not the film. And if we award him for this, we're just feeding the wrong troll.
But the performance?
I don't want it to win.
Hey, Amy, I'm going to tell you something. Come back here. I want to tell you something about that movie. You got to get that movie in there.
No.
So that's my A Star is Born impression.
Oh, no.
And that's more impression.
Hey, here. I like to see you try to make Maestro.
Oh, no. This episode of Unspooled is brought to you by Nutrafol, who says, you know what? Spring is here, but there is one thing that is in style every single season, and that is a healthier head of hair that makes you feel fabulous. When people talk about how they wish they were, you know, a little fuller, a little bouncier on top, they tend to blame genetics, you know, your mother's father and all of that. Like, hey, Grandpa, what is the deal with this DNA that you gave me? But there are actually multiple factors in play when it comes to thinning hair, which is something that a lot of women experience at different stages in their life, too. There's stress, nutrition, aging, giving birth. All of these other things can also affect the health of your hair, which is why Nutrafol goes to the root of the issue with a multi-targeted hair care approach that starts with whole body health. Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist-recommended hair growth supplement brand, with over 1 million people seeing thicker, stronger, faster-growing hair with less shedding. Their hair growth supplements are physician-formulated using 100% drug-free ingredients. With Nutrafol, building a hair growth routine is simple. You can purchase it online, no prescription, no doctor visits are required. You get free shipping and automated deliveries to make sure you'll never miss a day. You can see results in 3 to 6 months. So if you want to get there by the next season, take the first step to visibly thicker, healthier hair. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering listeners $10 off your first month subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com/men and enter the promo code UNSPOOLED. Nutrafol.com/men, promo code UNSPOOLED.
Ross has all the spring deals you want, so you can say yes to more looks for you and your budget. Tube tops for less? Yes. Dad shorts for the weekend? Yes. Mini skirts for less than online? That's a yes for you and your bank account. Find your certified yes for me moment and save 20 to 60% off department store prices every day at Ross. Hurry in for spring deals today. Items and styles vary by store.
We touched on it earlier. So let's go back to it. Let's go to American Fiction, because American Fiction to me is, you're talking about creators, and we go from maestro, a world-renowned creator, someone who is embedded in our culture, to this other creator who I think, you know, we talked about the internal process, and I love this movie for a bunch of reasons. We talked about Jeffrey Wright's performance, but I like that idea that, you know, Jeffrey Wright's character is very good at something, but like, it just doesn't make a difference. It's like, not even boring. It's just like, he's good at something. It just is not going to get attention. I think that that core idea is really fascinating. Like, I do that too. Why isn't anybody paying attention to me? Or I'm good. You know, it's like, I think that's a universal theme. That's not just about, like, you know, professors in a college. You know, it's like, he's fighting against this world that I think wants the poppy, showy 5-second thing. And I really loved the way that this movie kind of articulated that. What if you leaned into that? What if you became the meme? What if you became the, you know, the viral moment, and wrestling with how fulfilling or not fulfilling it was? And I love that this movie at the end goes meta, you know, to be like, maybe this is it. You know, I don't know. And
maybe this is an Oscar movie. Like, that whole addendum is not in the original book that it's based on.
Oh,
like,
really?
He added that and fleshed it out. And I think it is really smart and really telling, because it gets nominated for Best Picture, just as this movie sort of predicted, because it's wrestling with these things.
I mean, it's a movie that also includes the term Oscar bait in the film.
Exactly. And for me, the most telling part that just gutted me in American Fiction is, you know, he's a guy who specializes in writing kind of academic, really tweety understandings of Greek literature, you know, which the actual author of the book also did. He wrote his own retelling of Medea. And when he goes to the bookstore to find his books, and he realizes they've been shelved not in like history, antiquity, literature, you know, theater, anything, that they've been shelved under African-American fiction, just the insults of that absolutely like ripped my heart out, made me so furious. And I love that this movie goes after that. Why are we putting people in the wrong boxes?
I know. And that scene in the bookstore, it's not even why we're putting people in the wrong boxes. It's like, people are being boxed because maybe it sells, or maybe it's easier. Like, in this culture of trying to give everybody a voice, we also lump people together so much quicker. It's like, well, you are your identity versus you are your work. I was so excited to see Cord Jefferson talk about this. It's his first nomination. But
Cool is it, by the way? First nomination, first film? That's awesome. First film, first nomination, I guess is how I should say it.
Yeah, it's great. But when I watched it, I was like, oh, this is Hollywood Shuffle. This is like the modern day Hollywood Shuffle. And we talked about that when we watched Hollywood Shuffle. Like, oh, it's taking apart an interesting thing of the industry at this time when like Eddie Murphy's super popular, and we're kind of coming, not out of blaxploitation, but there's like this idea of like what black films are. This is doing it in a whole nother way. And I think taking it out of the film world, it does very much a similar thing. It's satire. It's showing us. But I think that, you know, where Hollywood Shuffle definitely is about like black culture and cinema, this, I think, examines black culture. But I also think it has a wider implication too.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it set out to do a thing that's really tricky, which is, it wants to talk about how black artists get pigeonholed by society, and how, and to do so, it has to talk about race, but it's also telling the story of an author who doesn't want to just be talking about race, who wants to talk about something other than race, who wants to be seen beyond that level. And so the movie itself is like, on the one hand, having these really funny, satirical scenes about race, but then on the other hand, saying like, and here's where we would just do this movie if we didn't have to talk about race at all. His mom needs to go into a home. He's dating a lady. He's got some emotional problems inside he needs to sort out. And we're not going to talk about the satire for half the film.
Yeah.
And are you cool with that? You know, and it takes you on that journey. I almost feel like it uses, you know, the fun gimmicks in the trailer to get you to watch the movie that it just wishes we could watch on its own. Like, what if this didn't have to even have this frame story?
Well, what you even saying that makes me realize that the scenes that I connect to the most in this film aren't the satire scenes. They are these smaller scenes, like the fight at the dinner table when his girlfriend's like, oh, I actually like that book, you know, and his just disdain for himself and who he is. The scene with his sister when they're talking about putting his mom into the home, you know, and I love Sterling K. Brown in this. He's fantastic. And the way that that character kind of unravels itself throughout the entire film, it's like, it's all those moments, those silent moments, those small moments that I think make this film a Oscar worthy, but it's kind of like the perfect package. It's got the satire, it's got big fun moments, but it really is. I think the memorable stuff is all these really just small little beats.
Yeah, I really agree. And this would be my pick to win, straight out win, mm-hmm. win adapted screenplay, because so much of that stuff isn't in the book. Like the girlfriend character is only one date in the book.
Wow.
And he expands it into like a whole character arc where you really get to understand how that relationship works.
Did you read that book?
I did read that book.
Okay.
And he also, you know, the writer that he's really competitive with.
Yeah.
Who he expands that character too, like with this idea of being on the jury. She's on the jury,
that not jury
only
stuff.
Here, ugh. Not in the book. And those scenes are so good.
Really,
I almost
great.
Wanted their showdown to be a little bit more combative than it was.
Right.
As if like I was waiting for that showdown, and it kind of rushes it. But I think it rushes it because Cord Jefferson also doesn't know the answer to how do we solve this problem.
Right,
you know, nobody does. He's just going to let both sides argue it out for a second.
And I think that that is what makes this movie really interesting, because it's not prescriptive. It's just kind of an examination of it. And the ending is just like, right? Maybe. It's not like it gives up. I feel like it's so hard to stick the landing casually. And I feel like that's what this movie does. It kind of gives you these runners. We have this Adam Brody character who comes back in, and you see this idea of like how it's all getting morphed. But the ending is very fulfilling without being like a nice tidy bow at the end. It's like, well, this is the system, this is it, and we can live in it and we will live in it, and people don't care.
It's true. And I am really glad that Sterling K. Brown got the nomination. Although for me, my heartbreak of it is like, I think he's very good in this, but he's so much better in Biosphere, a movie that I'll be yelling about for the rest of my life.
Oh, I know. The Mark Duplass movie, very good movie. I like that movie.
He's so good in that. If there was an Oscar God, his performance in that is what I wish was up for actor in a leading role. In a heartbeat, I would put that over everybody else.
Well, this is the thing that I get irritated with too. I mean, this is the Oscars in general, and I am not going to get on my soapbox, but I will for a second.
Oh no, you're getting on your soapbox.
Get on my soapbox. Here I am on my soapbox. The thing that always gets me about the Oscars is it stays so insular. Okay, Maestro, American Fiction, and they all get, you know, X amount of nominations, you know, 6 nominations for American Fiction. That's great. I'm psyched. But they don't ever really expand it. It's like, you're not going to see, you know, a lone best actor or actress nomination that doesn't really come with a bunch of other awards every now and then.
Yeah, but that's the stuff. That's why I get so annoyed at things like Emily Blunt being nominated for Oppenheimer. Because I'm like, you're just rotating that in
because
you saw
mad.
Like, and it's not her fault. I think Emily Blunt is a very good actress.
Yes.
But she has a terrible character who's just like,
terrible.
I'm mean and
not
drunk.
Terrible.
And then I have one good speech and then that's it. And you're like, what's that? That should not be up here for actress for supporting role. I'm so annoyed.
I know. You're so right. It's like, but she's in this movie, so we have to give this nomination. And it just took a slot. And I feel like supporting roles are the most fun roles. And that's when we can really kind of look around and find all these different
Even
performances.
Comedies. You can nominate stuff here that you can't nominate ever with. When Melissa McCarthy was nominated for Bridesmaids.
I love it. I mean, look at this. Like, if you look at the top ranking films of 2023, right? It's Barbie, Super Mario Brothers, Spider-Man, Guardians of the Galaxy, Oppenheimer, The Little Mermaid, Wonka, Ant-Man and the Wasp, which everyone says is a failure, but it's in the top 10. It's so hilarious. John Wick, Chapter 4, and Sound of Freedom. Now, look.
I will say in this list, there's not a supporting actor's nominee among them.
Except, wait a second.
Except the girl who plays Ursula when she becomes a human on Earth. I'm blanking on her name. She's very good.
Okay. I'm gonna take you to task and go, tell me the poker player in John Wick 4 does not deserve an Oscar nom. I mean, that man, first of all, he's not that big. He's not that big of a man. He's in a giant fat suit. And I did not know that. And he's doing all those fights.
You're talking about Scott Adkins?
Yeah.
I fucking love Scott Adkins.
And you don't think he should get a best supporting? Scott Adkins, justice for Scott. Oh. I mean, that physically...
Scott Adkins is amazing. I got punked and saw a movie 3 weeks ago
yeah.
because it said it was a Scott Adkins movie. When I tell you that man showed up for 90 seconds just firing a machine gun and didn't do any stunts. I was livid. I watched the whole thing.
This is like when I worked at Blockbuster. There was like a movie that I think Adam Sandler was in before anything ever happened. And they put him on the cover, like holding a life preserver. And he's never in the movie, like for 2 seconds. You know,
yeah, it's like when oh, what is it? Like when Tom Cruise was in a movie in the 80s in one scene. And yes. Then he's like, well, no, I'm on the cover of this Marilyn Monroe. That happens to all these Marilyn Monroe movies.
Well, my other question about these best actor and supporting actor noms is that we very rarely, or we never, nominate a voice performance.
Yeah, like Scarlett Johansson for Her would have been so good years ago. And also, before we leave this absolute gracking about the supporting actor noms,
yes.
I have one. Somebody's going to win for best supporting actor, and I'm going to be so mad about it because I don't even think they should be nominated, and that is Robert Downey Jr. for Oppenheimer.
I know you don't like this one, but that's the one that's
he's going to win. I don't even understand it. Like, he should have won for Tropic Thunder over this, for Christ's sake. Like,
well,
I don't even understand why he's up here when Charles Melton needs that slot for May, December.
I think Robert Downey Jr. is very good in Oppenheimer. I do. I think it's a great...
He's just huffy.
Okay, I get it. But I don't get that he should be walking away with this
category.
They're
just happy that he quit doing Marvel movies. It's like a thank you, please do some acting. It's like giving a dog a treat. Come on, come this way.
Okay, but look, we saw that happen with Eddie Murphy. He didn't walk away with that award. But this feels like it's just ordained. It's going to be Robert Downey.
I hate that.
But
why
I also
do
think
they do that?
Because I think it's a tip of the hat to Robert Downey Jr. doing 10 years of Marvel. I think it's the opposite.
You should be punished for that, not rewarded.
I think that they didn't have the balls to give him the Oscar nomination for The Snap in Avengers. And this is their forgiveness tour.
Honestly, I will say, I would have rather he got the Oscar for finally dying in the Avengers movies than this one.
Don't know spoilers. I mean, but to me, the thing that bums me out the most is, and there's a bunch of performances I could do this with in supporting, Ryan Gosling and Barbie and Robert Downey Jr. and Oppenheimer. When you check in 20 years, what are we going to be thinking about? It will be Ryan Gosling and Barbie. That's a great, I mean, it's a funny performance. It's not going to get any of its kudos because it's funny and whatever. He's performing at the Oscars, which is great. I'm excited for him, but that's a great role.
It is a great role.
And
of the people on this list, that's the one I would want to win, honestly.
And you know what? I will say that the one that I was most excited by on this list, because it surprised me, was Robert De Niro. I thought that was one of the best performances I've seen Robert De Niro give in Killers of the Flower Moon in a long time. I was like, whoa, this is a solid fucking performance.
I take back everything I just said. Actually, the performance I want to win is Mark Ruffalo in Poor Things.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I selected him to lose, but my God, he's good. He and Gosling, I would say, are neck and neck.
Yeah.
Fabulous performances. But I've never seen Mark Ruffalo do that. If we're going to reward a Marvel actor, that one. He made that role so funny and weird and strange and creepy and interesting.
I love that
performance. It has levels.
I mean, it's funny because then I go like, does he deserve it more than Willem Dafoe? Because Willem Dafoe is pretty great in that too. But you're right. Like there is something about his manic energy that feels like he's a part of the scenery. I mean, but so does Emma Stone. Like, and that's what I love about that movie. So it pains me to even say like that movie should be a half an hour shorter because I want to live in it. It's beautiful. It feels like what the last two attempts at Willy Wonka movies have wanted to be. And I know everyone loves this Wonka. God bless you. But
not my Wonka. The Chalamet Wonka is not my Wonka. He comes in, he acts like Paddington. He's nice to everybody. He doesn't scare anyone. And
not
he
like,
leaves.
Not
what the,
like,
what that's what's that?
Well, Amy, you want to be scared? Then come to my, I'm doing this little thing in Glasgow. it's called the Willy's Chocolate Experience. And we have the Babadook there.
Oh my God, will you please be sad Oompa Loompa for Halloween?
Oh, I wish it would have come out
She's
then.
She's so good. I want to shake her hand.
Can we just quickly talk about Killers of the Flower Moon? Because I feel like that's that can be the one that we can kind of probably fly by the quickest. I liked it. It's good. I thought that, and this is maybe something that you could talk to, the book had more things that were interesting that were just omitted from this opus. And I don't know. Something to me felt like it really worked. And then also it really didn't work in this movie. Like, I don't know if it was trying too hard to be like, well, I'm Martin Scorsese, I'm making this movie about Native Americans, but at the same time, I know that I shouldn't be making it, so I'm going to lean into more of that stuff in the first half and not lean into the stuff in the second half. And the second half, I think, is a little bit more interesting. I also felt like I would have loved to have seen Killers of the Flower Moon directed by the Coen brothers.
Oh, yeah.
That, to me...
That's a good tone for this. That's the tone that Leonardo DiCaprio's acting in, is
yes,
that one.
Yes, and I felt like this movie is a comedy about dumb crooks.
They're so dumb.
They're so fucking dumb. And that tonally, to me, is what I wanted. And I love DiCaprio's performance in this, too. It's funny. It's weird.
Yeah, it's closer to Wolf of Wall Street than, yes, like, The Aviator. You know, he's really having fun.
Yes. And, you know, I think that this movie can kind of be wrapped up in that final scene, that scene where Scorsese is acting and doing this radio play. It feels like somewhere along the way, we were too worried about how to tell the story the right way. And I think that I want to be very careful of my words here, because I think it's worthy of telling this story. But I also felt like the in was wrong. It was like, well, you're going to tell it from this, like, De Niro, DiCaprio point of view. Ultimately, Lily Gladstone is fantastic in it. I love her performance. I loved watching it.
Yeah. But if you shift it around like a Hitchcock movie where she's the heroine of,
yes,
it, that's right. It is tricky that we're in this moment in culture where it's like people would be touchy if Scorsese did that.
Right.
But at the same time, what if he really did the work and really worked to make it very, very good? You know?
Right.
And like talked, yeah, and listened and thought about it. Like, I don't like rubber stamping who can and can't make movies, because I want to imagine that everybody will take it seriously. If that movie was about you watching her wondering if her husband is trying to,
yes,
kill her, that's tense.
Yes. There's so much richness in it. I like the love story.
The love story. I like the scenery.
Me too.
You know, and you know, well, now that you're an Oklahoma expert,
yeah,
I love Oklahoma.
Oklahoma.
To go to Oklahoma to see this, to live in this time period in Oklahoma that I spent there, I was 5 years in Oklahoma, never heard this story before.
I mean, that, and that's why I think it's good that it was made. I just feel like it didn't have the right, it just felt like there's a lot of conflicting things. 10 nominations, though. So yeah, it's doing something,
but
right.
To be honest, I feel like when we have these grand masters who wind up in the best picture race, there's something that I think is kind of almost held against them. And mm-hmm, I don't mind it, which is I look at Killers of the Flower Moon and I think, should that win best picture? It's not the best thing Scorsese has made. It probably won't be the best thing he ever does make. Same thing with Oppenheimer.
Right.
Not the best movie Nolan's made, and he's going to make better movies. Why would we, you know, shoot our shot on this one?
Yeah, and the difference to me with Oppenheimer was, and I think this is the way I feel about all of Nolan's stuff, it's very self-assured. Like, Tenet, I don't know.
Oh my God. I rewatched Tenet when
did
they just
go,
had it in,
yeah,
theaters and IMAX. Still no clue. Still absolutely no clue what's happening.
And God, you know what? God bless. Like, you know what? Like, but I think he does. It doesn't feel like, and I think Oppenheimer,
he's
like
a magician. He's like, I'm just going to act really confident. He's like a con artist.
Yeah.
He's like, trust me, I got this.
By the way, I went into Oppenheimer like a little bit like gritting my teeth, like, oh God, this is going to be so long. I know I got to see it. It's like, felt like homework. Didn't feel like homework when I was
like,
yeah, I was watching it. I was enjoying it. This Killers of the Flower Moon had this moment where I'm like, oh, what? It just felt like, it just got long. It just got long for me. And
I packed so many snacks to see Killers of the Flower Moon. I was really nervous. And I saw it at the DGA where you're not allowed to bring snacks.
Oh, yeah. That what a crime.
What a crime.
What a crime.
You're going to be here for 3 hours and I can't have snacks?
And here's my other issue. This is not me on my high horse, but I'm gonna say it.
Or is it you on your soapbox?
It's my soapbox again. Get out my soapbox. If you're gonna make these movies 3 hours, give us a pee break.
Yeah.
Give us a pee break,
Hateful
people.
Eight
come
did
on.
It right, guys.
And by the way, I came back and I was enjoyed that second half so much more because I was empty.
Good concentration.
And I had to refill this some snacks, stretch my legs for a second. This is not what we were supposed to do. We weren't supposed to just, you know, like, oh, for. Because what happens to me is, I'm watching this 3-hour movie and about 2 hours and 30 minutes, I'm like, I got to pee. But now it's the climax. I should have been peeing in 45 minutes into it. But I'm like, well, I don't have to pee now.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then you show up and now that they have the Coke Freestyle machines, you want to get the giant soda, even though they screwed with the Freestyle machine in a way that I cannot forget.
Why?
They got rid of sparkling water.
No, no, no.
No, they did.
No, no. You have to go to AHA.
What? It's under AHA?
Mm-hmm.
No, because they had it under Sparkling Dasani,
no,
and then I couldn't find it.
Go to AHA.
It's under AHA?
Yep.
All I ever want is sparkling water.
That's what I do.
It's under AHA.
Uh-huh.
I'm so glad I brought this up to you. I have been drinking, like, diet ginger ale and losing my mind.
This is what I do. I go to AHA, I get the sparkling water, and then I just give me like two squirts of Fanta.
Oh, that sounds so good. It's under AHA. Why would they shift it? Not let me know.
You got to find it. As somebody who drinks
I've
a lot of soda water.
I've never touched the AHA button in my life because I don't even know what AHA is.
Oh, AHA is just sparkling water.
It flavored. Is?
Yeah. That's
it
all it is?
Is.
That's all it is. It's just flavored sparkling water.
I thought it was like a Kool-Aid bush.
No, it's LaCroix.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
You've made my day.
All right, there we go.
Oh, wow.
All right.
Do you know the number of times I really agonized over this?
Well, that, if Killers of the Flower Moon brought anything to the table, it's that AHA is a great flavored seltzer.
Oh, thank God. This podcast brought to you by AHA.
Ross has all the spring deals you want, so you can say yes to more looks for you and your budget. Tube tops for less? Yes. Dad shorts for the weekend? Yes. Mini skirts for less than online? That's a yes for you and your bank account. Find your certified yes for me moment and save 20 to 60% off department store prices every day at Ross. Hurry in for spring deals today. Items and styles vary by store.
Whether you're making the same breakfast that you have every day or baking a cake for an extra special day, eggs are a staple in our diets. Eggland's Best eggs are nutritionally superior to ordinary eggs, containing more vitamins and 25% less saturated fat. Not only are they better for you, but Eggland's Best eggs taste better too. There's a reason that they're America's number one eggs. Visit egglandsbest.com for additional information and delicious recipes.
I mean, I think we talked about Oppenheimer enough,
well,
right?
Well, no, I want to talk about one more thing about Oppenheimer, which is I picked it to lose a category. I picked it to lose production design for one specific reason.
Why?
Because in that scene when, you know, he's like giving the speech about how they dropped the bomb in front of that gymnasium of people who are freaking out and waving flags, the flags they use in that scene are the 50-star flags, which did not exist yet.
Did you find that out? Did you notice that in the cinema? Did you notice it in the cinema?
I actually did not notice it until my lovely aunt and uncle brought it up. Then they noticed it immediately because they're both ex-military and they're very annoyed.
Well, I want to bring up one thing that I don't think that people know, or maybe a handful of people know, how the script was written. The script was written in the first person, and it is fantastic to read. If you can get your hands on it, and they'll play a little snippet of it at the Oscars, it's truly the most engaging thing I've ever read. It's like, I'm looking at her. She looks at me. We fuck. It's like, whoa. It's like, it's,
Okay.
Yeah, it's very interesting. It's really well done. I hope it gets adapted screenplay because what a bold ass choice. Although if you're Christopher Nolan, it's not like you have to get anybody's attention. But at the same time, knowing that this material is dry, I think he understood, like, I have to keep it interesting that way. You have to read it like a novel. And you know what? I have to say that the interesting thing about Oppenheimer, too, is, you know, we talked about Top Gun bringing people back to the cinema. Oppenheimer did it in a way, too. Like, I felt like people were like, we have to go see it, this crazy ass IMAX movie that, you know, they're building special extensions onto projection booths because the film was so long. I like a spectacle. I like a spectacle.
I liked it, too. Although I will say every single time I saw Oppenheimer and when I saw Tenet at different theaters, there was like a hair on the screen for at least one reel. And I just feel like God bless the projectionists who are learning how to project these things. God bless any projectionist job that still exists in this country. But, oh man, I felt every time I thought Christopher Nolan would come in here and burn this building down right now. Every single time.
And you're here in LA, so the projectionists are probably the top of the line.
They're the cream of the cream. They're on the soapbox on the top horse. They're shaking martini shakers of cream, making butter. I don't even know. They're great. But I think when I look back at the last year, when I look back at 2023, Barbenheimer will have been my favorite thing. Barbenheimer is my demarcation. Barbenheimer is special.
Yes.
That was a really, really special moment.
The Tom Cruise killer.
The cinema. Yes. And I just really wish that we were rounding out this year where it didn't feel like Oppenheimer was now destroying Barbie on all terms. I put Barbie as my best picture pick to lose, but also because I vote with my conscience and it is the one I want to win. Out of all of these, I want Barbie to win.
I think Barbie could win.
Oh, I wish it would.
You think it's not going to win?
I think it's not going to win. I think if it was going to win, they would have at least tipped their hat and put Gerwig in Best Director.
You see, I think that's the award that when people walk away, they go, oh, well, Barbie was the best movie of the year. That was the most culturally significant film.
It was the most culturally significant film by far.
And Nolan may walk away with Best Director, and there might be a lot of other awards that it doesn't get, but there's something about Barbie that makes me believe the only chance of that to get anything is Best Picture. It could be like one of those rare years where it's like Barbie wins. And Barbie is truly just this amazing feat, you know, from writing to directing. The casting is kind of perfect. I know there's a lot of talk about what they didn't get, but I don't want to spend time on that because I feel like that's been talked to.
It is so ambitious. I mean, on the scale of these Best Picture nominees, they're very good. A lot of the smaller ones in here are not as ambitious as Barbie was. You know,
I don't think that Barbie was trying to be an Oscar movie either. I think that Barbie became a phenomenon. I don't think anyone knew what Barbie was. I think that Greta Gerwig just made a movie that she wanted to make. It took on this other life.
And
you know?
It deserves it.
Yeah.
When I think about the people in my life who are not even like movie nerds like us, who went to the theater to see Barbie and came away just shaken. Loved it. Favorite
multiple
thing.
Multiple times.
Twice. That's special. That is special. We haven't had a lot of Best Picture nominees that feel like that.
No, that are culturally significant, that are financially significant.
That are great.
And that are great. Yeah. And I think like, you know, there's a big argument. And this is one thing I do want to talk to you about in their nominations. There's 8 nominations, you know, a supporting role for actor and actress, costume design, song nominations, Best Picture. But to me, this adapted screenplay was something that I really
so
want to get
ludicrous.
Into. Well, but now I want to, like, I get it, right? I get it on some level because the reason why people wanted to see Barbie is because Barbie is established. We know Barbie and Ken, right? And that on some level must mean it's adapted, right? It's not, it is from something, you know, and
but
regardless.
People are seeing Maestro because they like Leonard Bernstein.
Sure. But I mean, that's adapted too, right?
Original. They have it under original.
Oh, wow. Okay, interesting. But I think that, like, look, a real person in the world, you can't say, well, that's adapted. I mean, this is a character that was created by someone else, Barbie, and they put life to it. But I think what's so interesting is, you know, I remember there's a thing last year, 2 years ago, where some studio was hearing pitches for the M&M's movie. You know, like, there's always going to be these movies like, oh, can you reinvent this? Can you do this? And the reason why is because they know that people like it. There's an IP attached to it. So I know people are like, well, it's not adapted. How dare they? But I think it is adapted because it is based on something that we know.
See,
and I don't think that takes anything away from it.
I'm open to that. And I think it'd be fun if it came in and won. But I also do feel like, to me, an adapted thing means you're going off of a source. You know, Oppenheimer's adapted because it's going after a specific book.
Mm-hmm.
What if Barbie are they specifically going? She has
Barbie
like,
and Ken. We understand
yeah,
that.
Yeah, but that's not a tome, you know, there's like 9,000 Barbie movies, a bunch of Barbie cartoons. There's so much Barbie property. It's not like she's going to one source of Barbie.
But when you look at that set, that's the Barbie Dreamhouse. We know what that is. Like, I could never have seen Barbie, and I know that's the Barbie Dreamhouse. That's Barbie. That's Ken. Like, these are things that they took and they reinvented them. I think that like this. I don't think there should be. I guess what I'm saying is there should be no turning up your nose at adapted because they did it. Arguably the hardest thing ever to create an original screenplay with material that you would never think would be elevated.
Well,
to this
and
level.
No shade on adapted. I mean, you know, next year I'm going to be agitating so hard for Dune 2 to get the adapted screenplay. Maybe there will be something out that will
sure.
come better that's better than it. But
not
when you think about
things.
How that movie really just like reshaped the book, that's an art form. Absolutely an art form.
I just think people are angry at it because they're like, but it's so original. It's so interesting. It's like, yeah, they did their fucking job, right? Like when you look at Lin-Manuel, you know, with Hamilton, that's adapted. That's adapted from a book that he read. That's his genius going, oh, I'm going to make this into a rap musical.
Yes, it's just the book part is missing. That's all. The book part is missing.
Watch the final credit sequence of that movie. That's all, they're showing you every version of Barbie and every little thing. It's like, and those are the jokes that are in the movie too. There are a lot of specific product jokes or Barbie specific product jokes. I mean, I think that she really, that's what makes the movie so good. Is like she embraced everything about this that we knew and just blew it out of the water. I know you're saying it's not a book. It's not a story.
But you just put story in finger quotes.
But it's like, but it is adapted in the sense that, like, I don't know if you could make that movie without that property.
Okay. I'd be happy if it won. I'd actually be happy if it won.
Okay.
Who I voted to lose, but because I want them to win, also an original screenplay, May December. I love that movie.
Oh, Sammy Birch, fantastic. She is writing, or she wrote, the never-to-be-seen Coyote versus Acme, which you and I got to go see, and it was great.
I'm so glad we got to see that.
Me too. I mean, I'm so bummed. As we're recording this, Will Forte just like announced, like, I am so bummed. This movie is really good, and I don't understand it, and I'm sorry.
It's really wrong.
It's really wrong.
It's absolutely wrong.
But I don't want to like gloss over Barbie more than saying, like, I think the performances are great. I know that there are some slights, but I believe that this actually is going to be the sleeper hit. I'm going to vote. I am not going to even risk it because I think it can be the sleeper hit.
Okay, fair enough.
All right.
You know what my riskiest vote is? What? Maybe it's my least risky, actually. Because I feel like when it comes down to our ballots of who's going to not get anything right, yeah, where it becomes really tricky is in the small ones.
Yes,
you know? Where you're kind of guessing. Like, I did my shorts this year just by name. You know, purely by name, purely by gut instinct. I was like, I can't see anybody standing up on that podium and saying that animated short film goes to War Is Over, all caps, inspired by the music of John and Yoko. I don't think it's going to happen. So I put that, oh no, he's grumbling.
I don't know.
I think if I'm going to say I have a sure bet here, my surest bet of something that's going to lose is under original song.
Mm-hmm.
It is Diane Warren, because she's been nominated now 15 times.
Okay.
Never won. When I talked to her about this last year, she said she was absolutely sure she'd be nominated this time for a different song, Gonna Be You from 80 for Brady, didn't get nominated. Instead, she got nominated for a song from Flamin' Hot, the movie about the Flamin' Hot Cheetos called The Fire Inside.
Yes.
And I wanted to do a tiny pop quiz with you.
Okay, sure.
Because The Fire Inside, it's not going to win. We're never going to hear of the song ever again. You've probably never heard of
it.
I listened to it. I saw Flamin' Hot, didn't remember there was a song there. Listened to it again just to check. I pulled some lyrics. I'm going to pop quiz
you. Okay, great.
Because there are two songs called The Fire Inside. Mm-hmm. One is by Diane Warren. The other one is by Bob Seger. And I want you to tell me if this couplet is from Diane Warren or Bob Seger. Are you ready?
Okay.
There's no way you can hide the fire inside.
Well, I mean, that seems like Bob Seger.
That is Bob Seger.
Yeah.
All right. No one can kill your vibe when you got the fire inside.
Bob Seger.
Diane Warren.
Whoa,
Diane Warren.
Vibe. I thought was going to be total. I thought you were going to be double Seegers.
Let them all laugh. You'll have the last laugh.
Diane Warren.
Yes, yeah. Diane Warren. Yes. Good job. Last one. You want to go double or nothing?
Yeah.
There's a reckless feeling in your heart as you head out tonight.
Bob Seger.
Yes.
All right.
Good job.
Nailed it.
Good job. Anyway, okay. Definitely going to lose. Sorry, Diane Warren.
All right, Amy, I want to put you on the spot. Animated feature film. I always an interesting category, what gets in there. But I feel like, man, fucking Miyazaki. Is it his best?
No.
But no. And it's going to win.
It's going to win. It's annoying. It's not his best.
And it sucks because, I mean, I know we talked about Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. We talked about the first one. I just feel like, you know, that category, people may not have ever seen that film. And there's like, check, check, check. Check. And I think Spider-Man, Across the Spider-Verse, we've already talked about it. I think they're doing fantastic, amazing, innovative stuff, moving the form of animation forward. But they just all, I mean, that whole category, that everybody in that category have to sit back and just be like, I'm going to take it on the chin. We're going to just get our asses kicked.
It's annoying. I mean, I would almost want to have squeezed in even like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie.
Yes.
Which I think got dinged because people thought that the animation style was derivative of Spider-Verse. But to me, that shouldn't be an insult. It should be a sign of a new shift
to
expressionism away from the Pixar mantra. And in that case, I actually feel a little guilty that I voted for the Pixar to lose because I actually did like this Pixar.
I know you
I
liked it.
Elemental. If you're watching Elemental and you're not thinking like, oh, this is going to open up my heart, make me cry about my childhood, which I'm so over for Pixar.
Yeah.
But if you think, hey, I'd like to watch a good romantic comedy, that's what Elemental is. It's just a great animated romantic comedy.
Yeah.
I'm fine with that.
Was that Charlie Kaufman Orion film eligible for this year?
I think it's eligible next year.
Okay.
I saw it. There's some Kaufman-esque detours. It's good for neurotic children.
I know. I was enjoying watching it with one of my children who's neurotic. Our final two that I think we can talk about. Here's my quick take on the holdovers. I've seen this movie a million times. It's the best version of that movie I've ever seen. I love it. Alexander Payne's great. Casting is great. Had a great time watching it.
I would go live inside the Holdovers. Yep. I would sit on that couch. I would drink Jim yep. Beam. I'm very happy if Divine joined Randolph Wins. That's great.
Yep. Going to be on my Christmas rotation. Yeah, probably. Yeah, yeah, probably.
No, we're great. Good there. I'm fine with it. I have to admit that with past lives, I am the worst person in the world because I'm the one person who's not really moved by this movie.
Well, you said it didn't go far enough. Somebody it asked, didn't. What do you mean it didn't go far enough? What did you want?
What I mean is I feel like, you know, this movie is very similar to this to the director's own romantic love story.
Okay.
And, you know, it's kind of, it's inspired by her own experiences. And I feel like she reshaped her life where instead of digging into like the actual emotional complication and pain and struggle, she made it like the hottest guy in the world wanted me back and I stayed with my loser husband. I felt like she framed it that way. And I don't feel like she really went hard enough on herself. So in that case, it was annoying. I felt like it kind of made you think of your own love life, but she wasn't willing to go there and get messy. And that's why it didn't work on me.
Okay. Well, first of all, I'm going to take a little bit of umbrage at loser husband. I thought that performance of her husband.
He's great.
Fantastic.
He's fantastic.
I didn't think he was a loser. I thought
she frames him as a loser from the very first beginning, like when they're both at the writing seminar.
Yeah.
And you know, you have this long scene that kind of feels like, what's the point of her walking up and down all these hallways and picking out the best bedroom? The point of spending time watching her pick out the best bedroom at the writing retreat is that her husband is the one who shows up late and gets the leftovers. She frames him as the leftovers from the beginning. Mm. Heartless.
Wow. All right. You know what? I thought this movie was really beautifully directed. It only has two nominations. I was surprised it wasn't nominated for Best Cinematography because, A, you're doing something that I think is really interesting. We've seen a lot of COVID movies that are shitty. Like, oh, screens, bullshit. This, they did something really interesting with the framing, the talking of them. I also felt like she shot the hell out of New York City. Like, for me to be impressed about a movie in New York, I was like, wow, this looks really, really good.
It does look really nice. I like the way she filmed it. And I think the performances are great.
I thought Greta Lee was great. Really with the story. To you, I was into it. I am hearing what you're saying.
Her ex-boyfriend is so wonderful. And every time she does a scene with her husband, it's like, oh, he's just kind of there. And she's like rolling her eyes at him for trying to, you know, learn Korean. It's like,
I mean, there's nothing more upsetting.
She stacks the deck right. And she's the one who comes out looking the best. And that annoys me.
Well, she does run to him crying, which I was like, well, yeah. I mean, yeah, okay. All right. You know what?
I got to say it.
I'm going to take it. These other two films that are in the Best Picture category are Anatomy of a Fall and Zone of Interest. And it's interesting because I feel like both of these films they're foreign films, but they're getting a little bit more attention than the normal foreign films get. I think Anatomy of a Fall, I'm so mad because I know in 2 years, we're going to remake Anatomy of a Fall.
Oh, I'm sure we are.
And it pisses me off. We don't need to remake it.
Julianne Moore.
Oh, she'd be great. But we don't need to remake it. It's mostly in English. I think the reason why that movie works in many respects is because it's like an awesome episode of Dateline. I love the hell out of it. It was great.
It was great. The people I know who love this movie most saw it through a different lens than I did.
Right.
They saw it as the story of the young boy figuring out whether or not his parents are liars.
Oh, okay.
And like, to them, it was really beautiful because it's about like reconciling with your own childhood and like who was the villain of your life.
Right.
I just POV-wise, I really came into it through Sandra Huller's perspective.
Yeah.
And it was about having to justify all the compromises you make in a relationship.
Yes.
Which you make tons of compromises in any relationship. And when you start saying them out loud, they all sound ridiculous. I liked that element of it.
That's what I loved about it. I felt very strongly that she was innocent. She did not kill her husband. And when put on trial with someone trying to prove that you did, exactly what you said, I found that to be fascinating. How could you defend that argument? That elevates it. Like, I don't want to, because I did love this movie, but I was thinking about it. Like, oh, is it Best Picture worthy? I don't know. But it was also dealing, like, American Fiction deals with something that I think is really interesting. And culturally, I think this movie deals with something really interesting. Like, she goes from a grieving widow, a mother who has to be put on trial and defend herself. And very rarely do we see a courtroom drama that is like this. And I really love that perspective. So, yeah, I got that. I get the boy's point of view, and I really loved his performance, and I loved his turn, and I love that he defended his mom and the way he kind of put it.
All my friends who cried at this movie cried because they were watching it from his point of view. I had a tiny little gripe with it that I've been trying to release.
Yeah.
Which is that the director never told the lead actress, Sandra Hüller, if her character is innocent or guilty. And that just has really kind of chewed at me because I feel like Sandra Hüller is a great actress. And I feel like not trusting her with that information is mean. And I feel like I wish I would have known that she knew and she was playing it a certain way. To know that she didn't know makes the vagary of it feels a little cheap. I don't know. I can't get behind it. And I've been trying to let that grievance go because I know it's ridiculous. And I do feel like, I went back and watched this movie and freeze frame some stuff. I do feel like the director, Justine Triet, I think she knows whether she's innocent or guilty, and I can tell you later what I think I saw that proves it. I took a couple of screen captures.
Well, look, I think that when you go back and look about The Staircase, the original documentary, it's very highly...
Oh, the movie about the bird that killed the wife?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's very much, the director keeps it vague, right? Mm-hmm. And if you look at the facts, it ain't so vague. And
I think I have an issue with vague.
I think
the tone of vague. I like irreconcilability, like in American Fiction, but I don't like built-in vague.
Well, I think that if you make her too innocent, it becomes a different story. If you make her too guilty, then it feels like she's trying to get away with something. I think running it down the middle actually makes this movie better because it's not manipulating. You're not rooting for an outcome. You're just going, I think what you're doing is you're going, how would I be in this situation? Oh, I've had that fight.
Oh, I would be executed. I could not pull this off.
No, I mean, and that's why I appreciate your friends are able to get in on the kids, but this movie is firmly centered on her. And, you know, it's like, so if she was guilty, what kind of tells would she be? And then I think it becomes weird. So what do you think with your screen grabs?
Oh, she's innocent.
Okay.
She's innocent. If you screen grab some of the shots of the roof immediately after he falls and he's still lying in the snow, you can see something hit the roof. You know, it's like a big part of it. Did something hit the roof and did the roof melt? Yeah. Did he hit his head on the roof? He hits his head on the roof. It's disturbed. You can see it from two angles.
I also think, I love that. And I also think that she didn't have enough energy to kill this guy. She didn't care.
No, she didn't care. Whatever. Yeah, yeah.
Zone of interest.
Also great, but you have to stay big. Zone of interest.
Oh, yeah.
The sound mixes.
I loved Zone of Interest. And I think that when I talk to people about Zone of Interest, they say, oh, I can't handle that. I'm not going to be able to handle that. And I say, no. I think you can.
You can. It's great. It's not my favorite thing, how average people will do bad things.
And I think, and yes, and I even go one step further and say, this is a movie that forces you to reconcile with how you live your daily life. Because I'll take LA, for example. You know, we drive by so many people living on the street in Los Angeles. All the time.
All the time.
And you become immune to it. You just do. Because it's not shocking anymore. And we live our lives amongst that. And there are people that are running for positions of power that are like, get them out. And there are people like, let's help them out. And
in the meantime, we're stuck in the middle. Like, what do you do?
Right.
On a day-to-day basis.
And by putting this... Like, it's not even the banality of evil. It's just...
The banality of ignoring?
Well,
of
it's like...
shutting out?
I just think it's like
human?
When it just... that's what it is. That's what it is. We live in this world where this is going on. So, yes, 20 years from now or 5 years before this, you could look at it in a different lens. How could they ever do that? But we're just in it. I love that movie because I think it puts it against the worst backdrop and says, well, that's how people could be. But again, so I really urge people to go see that. But honestly, I can't wait to see what happens between you and I. We have made our list, our losers list. Who will get the most wrong in Unspooled? You can grab your own PDF and compete with us on our website if you want.
I'm going for a full sweep. I want to get everything.
All right, let's see who can get the most wrong. You can keep track at home who gets the most wrong. And whoever wins the most wrong will be able to pull a movie off the API list. That's it. You get the full...
Oh, that's so brutal.
Anyone but the one that the audience has voted for, because I still think that is...
Oh, absolutely.
We don't want to be like that. All right, Amy, I'll see you after the awards.
It's on.
Our show could not be done without our team, and a huge thank you goes to them each and every week. produced and edited by Cody Fisher, and our associate producer, Jessica Cisneros. Our engineer is Casey Holford, and our MVP is Molly Reynolds. Our theme song is by Michael Cassidy, and our fan art is by Kim Troxell. Check it out all on social media, and you can find us on social media at Unspooled on Twitter and Instagram, and you can join in the conversation about all things Unspooled on the Paul Scheer Discord at discord.gg/Paul Scheer. There's an entire Unspooled section. T-shirts, mugs, stickers, and all Unspooled merch are available at tpublic.com/unspooled. And you can get a deck of Unspooled playing cards and more merch at podswag.com. That's right. And if you can't get enough Unspooled, you can listen to our archive for free anywhere you get your podcast. But remember to rate and review us. It does help. And finally, you can always check out the API list. That's right, the ever-growing list that we will eventually shoot into space at unspooled.com. And just a reminder, my book, Joyful Recollections of Trauma, comes out May 21st. You can pre-order it now, and if you do, I'll be so thankful. See you next time. Bye for now.
Ross has all the spring deals you want, so you can say yes to more looks for you and your budget. Tube tops for less? Yes. Dad shorts for the weekend? Yes. Mini skirts for less than online? That's a yes for you and your bank account. Find your certified yes for me moment and save 20 to 60% off department store prices every day at Ross. Hurry in for spring deals today. Items and styles vary by store.
Whether you're making the same breakfast that you have every day or baking a cake for an extra special day, eggs are a staple in our diets. Eggland's Best eggs are nutritionally superior to ordinary eggs, containing more vitamins and 25% less saturated fat. Not only are they better for you, but Eggland's Best eggs taste better too. There's a reason that they're America's number one eggs. Visit egglandsbest.com for additional information and delicious recipes.